just welcome everyone to Citizens Climate University, a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is one that we've been looking forward to. It's CCL's Rural Strategies for Success, Organizing Across the Heartland. And to get us going tonight, I'd love to just quickly introduce all four of our esteemed panelists tonight. We'll have the wonderful Dr. Vernon Dixon. Vernon is a retired psychiatrist now committed fully to the fight against climate change in Chattoog, Georgia's area, and we'll look forward to hearing his advice in just a bit. Before him, we'll have the wonderful Jan Elise Storm. Jan has been applying for more than 40 years her study, research, and work in environmental science and public health to support the CCL Agriculture Action Team as it works to build political will for and among farmers and agricultural stakeholders. We'll also have the wonderful Don Bayless on the line. Don is an attorney, a volunteer with CCL Flagstaff, and currently serves as the liaison for Congressional District 1 in Arizona, a district that stretches all across the vast rural expanses of that beautiful state. And then last up, we'll have Dan Hersher. Dan is a fourth-generation co-owner of the Fred Thomas Resort in Birchwood, Wisconsin, a husband, father of two, and former high school science teacher, as well as the co-leader of the Birchwood Blue Hills Citizens Climate Lobby chapter. He enjoys many things, including bringing people together on climate, electric vehicles, and all things clean tech. And I'll also highlight that we have wonderful information towards the end from Steve and Cheryl Welsh, co-leads from CCL Chadron, Nebraska, and Mary Dibert, co-lead in CCL Rapid City. So the lineup's going to be pretty straightforward. We're going to have a chance to start. We're organized tonight by our levers of building political will. We'll start with lobbying in New York. We'll move down to Georgia for a whistle-stop tour of print media. We'll then go over to Flagstaff and talk about some guerrilla grassroots tabling tour techniques. And then we'll focus on Birchwood's story for Grass Tops Networking, ending up in the Heartland talking about hard-earned chapter organizing tips from Chadron and Rapid City.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So let me just start by saying thanks for having me, and also to remind you that the path to passing a nationwide carbon fee and dividend we know requires building connections, sharing knowledge, and celebrating small wins along the way. Most of all, it requires really listening, which in turn requires creating opportunities where that can occur. And I think what we've been able to accomplish over the past 2 years in our Columbia County, New York chapter with farmers is a good example of this strategy at work. So we've been working across all the levers of political will, but I want to start first by acknowledging the leadership of our co-leaders, Karen and Bruce Fishkoff, our congressional liaisons, and other active members who lead us and support us in all our work from municipal resolutions to engaging new members in our area. And I personally am very fortunate to be a member of a very strong team. But for myself, for me, my intersection with CCL has been through an agriculture lens. And smaller scale farmers abound here in rural Columbia County, and they are drivers of our local economy and are extremely important constituents to our member of Congress, Congressman John Faso. So we recognized early on that they're important and valuable community members to connect with and have on our side. But initial outreach on my part, though, quickly showed we actually had a lot to learn about, one, the economics of farming, and two, the climate solution that farmers actually wanted to tell us about, carbon farming. So to facilitate this learning, about 2 Januaries ago, our chapter hosted a community forum where we brought together scientists, farmers, and experts in land management to share information about the potential of carbon farming practices to offset the effects of climate change while improving farmers' long-term economic viability by improving soil health. And to our surprise, over 100 people, in fact, I think about 130 people attended. There was incredible interest and enthusiasm in this topic, including lots of young people and many farmers. We had a lot of questions and engaging conversations with the speakers, Also, unexpectedly, the senior aide from our New York State Assemblywoman, Dee Dee Barrett, attended and described the Assemblywoman's brand new carbon farming bill, which she had just introduced into the state legislature, which would provide tax credits for farmers engaging in carbon farming practices. So it was really kind of a serendipitous intersection of a lot of people that had some common ground. So the community forum proved to have been a really good way for us to better understand where farmers in our community stood, to bring them together with other community members and even legislators. Importantly, it also put us as CCL in an important facilitator role, being a force that could help bring disparate members of our community together to help find common ground on issues of mutual concern, like solving climate change and supporting farming. And the forum also caught the attention of political leaders, including our U.S. Representative John Faso, who was invited and attended. He spent a good deal of time talking with the speakers and attendees. He sits on the House Agriculture Committee and is also a member of the bipartisan House Climate Solutions Caucus. After he attended, we invited him to visit, to learn more about this by visiting a farm in our district to learn more about carbon farming and its economic and many other co-benefits for farmers and the rest of us. So he said yes, and we arranged for him to join us and other community advocates for a visit to the nearby Stonehouse Farm. You know, I see that picture, and in that picture, that gentleman is pulling out a soil core, 3 meters in length, so they were actually doing some science there while we were there, and he was very interested in that. Stonehouse Farm is a living model of the many benefits of what's called regenerative agriculture. The farm's key practices, which include tillage reduction, cover crops, companion planting, crop rotation, planned grazing even, and key line plowing, improve soil quality and health, making it more resilient to climate conditions like flooding and drought and less susceptible to erosion. And these importantly for us, these practices also increase soil's organic matter. And soils with more organic matter require less fertilizer, which in turn means less runoff into waterways and greater profitability for farmers. Perhaps most important of all, managing farms this way actually draws carbon out of the atmosphere and stores it longer term in soil, plants, roots, etc. If all cropland in the U.S. was farmed using regenerative practices, the greenhouse gas reduction would be equivalent to eliminating nearly 90% of our country's cars. So Congressman Faso was, he was impressed by Stonehouse Farm success. And again, he spent a lot of time. We were out there for a couple of hours and has been sharing and acting on what he's learned with others in Congress. He has called for incentives for carbon sequestration farming programs, and he's asked for CCL's help in identifying farms across the country that are practicing regenerative agriculture, particularly those in districts with a representative on the House Agriculture Committee. And more recently, as part of the Farm Bill development this year, he sponsored the Healthy Fields and Farm Economies Act, which is intended to strengthen conservation and healthy soil programs, which are essential and actually an important part of carbon farming. Our chapter is continuing to strengthen our relationship with Congressman Faso through our connections with farmers and the communities that support them. Later this fall, we'll be co-hosting an educational event with the Cornell Cooperative Extension entitled something like Food, Farms, Soil, and Climate, What's the Connection? And this event is intended to bring those engaged across the entire food system together to talk about this topic, which is of mutual interest to pretty much everyone. And tomorrow, in fact, I'll be discussing with the congressman's office here while they're in their district during this August break to see if the congressman might be interested in working with us to explore the possibility that a representative from Project Drawdown might provide a briefing for the Climate Solutions Caucus about the many agriculture-related climate solutions that Project Drawdown has identified. Meanwhile, we're continuing, those of us in our chapter are continuing to strengthen relationships with agricultural stakeholders in other ways. For example, myself and many other CCL members in our chapter have worked and are now working with several of the county farm bureaus in our district to develop policy proposals to be introduced at the state farm bureau level that recommend support and financial incentives for carbon farming. And this is the first step in moving a carbon farming proposal to the federal or National American Farm Bureau Federation. How is this creating political will in favor of a carbon fee and dividend, you might ask? Well, first, it's gotten elected officials talking with their constituents about climate solutions. That's huge. It's also given local farmers a platform to share their ideas and also tell us how they are also solving climate. The Columbia County chapter and other New York State CCL chapters will continue to meet with farmers in the Hudson River Valley and throughout rural upstate New York to explore how our advocacy for a revenue neutral carbon price can complement advocacy for agricultural practices that sequester carbon. Finally, CCL support for farmers has earned trust with local farmers. And that is helping to move the needle on getting them to begin to think about backing carbon pricing. Because of our local work using CCL's principal values, we're seen, as I've mentioned, as an honest broker in the community. We found that when you treat people with respect, it opens them up. By inviting farmers to have a platform where they're heard, changes are happening. In some cases, that simply means that a farmer's gone from opposing a carbon fee to saying it depends whether or not it would be okay with them. That's a small thing, but that shift matters. We also know this work takes time. And it starts when we listen, remain positive, and share solutions.
Here, here. Thank you, Jan. Uh-huh. For the sake of tonight, though, we are going to have the caravan roll on. And next up, we have the wonderful Vernon Dixon down in Chattoog in Georgia to tell us about print media and the work they're doing in that surrounding countryside.
Okay, thank you, Brett. And Jan, it was wonderful to hear you because I'm very interested in regenerative agriculture and I'd love to find out how we could get more people in Georgia interested in that. But anyway, in any event, with me, I live up in the small community of Hiawassee, Georgia, up in the northeast Georgia mountains. Very, very beautiful place, very rural, extremely conservative, plus 31 R voting identity. And we are a town of about 550 people, and there are several other small towns around our size that we also work with. So we are just very, very small rural community. And it's a very conservative community. So people just kind of don't want to talk about climate change because they think that's a taboo issue. And you're kind of afraid to speak out because what will everybody think of you? And it creates what they call the climate spiral of silence. And nobody says anything. I happened to get involved with, there was one other person in our community who was the sole person in the CCL chapter, we call the Chattoob chapter. He got me interested. I started to go into a few meetings with him, and he did luckily help me to write a letter to the editor. And he had also gone to be trained by the Climate Reality Project, and he talked with him about that. Unfortunately, he left very quickly after I started, so it left just me. I'm not a real outgoing person, not a real dynamic person, but I said, I can't let this thing die. So I started saying, what in the world could I do to try to get the message out that we, CCL, had something to offer and try to get more people involved? So I said, well, he taught me to write a letter to the editor. I thought I would try that. So I wrote another letter to the editor, to our local newspaper, and it got published. And I actually went in, so I went in to see the editors of several of the local newspapers, including one out of town, the big town in our area, Gainesville, Georgia, met the people. And to my amazement, these editors very much supported the action on climate change and said, hey, keep the letters coming. So I decided I was going to keep the letters coming. So I would write a letter to one area, like I would write a big letter to the Gainesville Times. And then I would take that and I would modify it and four or five different times, same general content, but with different things, sent it out to all the local newspapers, and they kind of ate it up and were very interested. And so out of one letter, I could get maybe five or six different letters to the editor in different newspapers. And so we began to get good response. I'd get people that would respond to me. Our local minister was actually even interested, and he said, good job. It got people interested. We got more people that got into our group, and we don't have a big group, maybe 8 or 10 people active, a lot more people inactive. Started doing something else a little bit different. Whenever I would get a letter to the editor published, if it was in the Gainesville paper, I'd get the URL and I put it on our website and write an article about that and send it out to all of our congressmen. And then I would get another letter to the editor that was published in one of the local papers. I would take it out, cut it out, make copies of it, about 5 or 6 copies, and then I would write a personal handwritten letter explaining it and why it was important. And then I would take those and I would mail them to our local congressman, both senators. I would mail it to the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. I would mail it to the local congressman's office. I got to know the person there fairly well. And I would even mail it to the president. And I thought that was working pretty well. And so we got a lot of responses and we got more interest generated. Now we probably get at least 5 or 6, sometimes 8 or 10 letters to the editors put out in various papers each month. We built some good relationships with the media. And if we have something local going on, like I went to the People's Climate March back in whatever year that was, 2014, I guess, and have been to some other things, I'll call them up and say, are you interested? They interview me. They do a really nice article about CCL and about what I went to and things that I did. And so that generates more attention. And we try to make We try to make calls to Congress frequently. I do it at least once a week, if not twice a week, and a lot of other people do, and just talk about things that are important to us, and always mention CCL has a carbon fee and dividend, which is the very best plan that's available that can grow the economy as well as combat climate change better than anything else. Other people began to notice this, like I said, my pastor, and I reached out to the Gainesville community, which is a bigger community, and thought we need to have something important there in a bigger area. We were able to contact the minister of the biggest Baptist church there and a big Methodist church there, and we got a local climate change expert from the University of Georgia, and we worked for maybe 6 months and decided we were going to put on a forum. And I had no idea how to do these kinds of things. I just said, we want to do it, and we're going to do it. So we started reaching out to people. We had meetings, and we got Brunel University, the local university of Gainesville involved, the University of North Georgia. And we got a forum there, and you can see a picture of us at we each gave some talks, and we had almost 250 people that came out to that event, and we were just all blown over from that, and we actually got a group formed in Gainesville from that. And my spiritual practice has always been very important to me, so I thought it was important to get some ministers involved, and sure enough, the ministers, I think, brought out more people than anybody else. So if you're interested in doing that, try to get some of your local ministers involved. And out of all these letters to the editors, talking with people, people began to hear about me, and I invited myself, and other people began to invite me to give a presentation. So I combined some talk from Climate Reality and CCL and put together a reasonably good talk, and have given probably at least 15, maybe 20 different talks around the area, and actually in other places in the state also. And I always get people to sign up when we go there, and we've got a list of some 320 people or so that have signed up and on a list. And what I do, I actually have a weekly action alert that I send out to all these people, picking some important topic about climate change, sending it out to them and asking them to call their congressman, and I have a list of their congressmen, and tell them that this is important to them. So we get a lot of people calling because of that. You know, I was left alone in a small place in an extremely conservative area, didn't know how to get it started. And so I just kind of took a blind leap and said, I've got to try to do something. These letters to the editors and then these forums that we sponsored have led to a lot of people getting interested in growing our chapter. It's just led to wonderful things, and I am so grateful to CCL because it's allowed me to present that to other people, and it's turned a really extremely conservative small area into people who are beginning to believe and hear it. And I'm going to be meeting with some members of our city council over the next couple of months individually and talking with them about it. So we hope to spread the word even more.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Vernon, for just personally testifying and providing an example of how you might feel like you're too small at times or, you know, really vulnerable, but regardless of where you're at, can do big things. And I think really emphasizing the importance firsthand that locally, through action like yours, you can break that spiral of silence. May the circle be broken on this one, I guess. But thank you so much for sharing your story, Vernon, and inspiring us all with the story of Chattoog, Georgia.
Glad to.
Don, I'm going to make sure you're unmuted, and I will pass the baton to you to find out more about Flagstaff's outreach to the rural countryside of Northeast Arizona.
Thanks, Brett. And let me agree that the presentations by Jan and Vernon were inspiring and instructive. Really appreciate the opportunity simply to listen to what I've heard already. I'm from CCL Flagstaff. We are a town 140 miles north of Phoenix, and we are in the middle of Arizona on the northern side, and we're in a huge district. We've got a number of urban folks in our city, and we decided some months ago, back in October, we needed to reach out. Our numbers were growing within the city, but we're next door to a congressional district that doesn't have a liaison. We've got the largest coal-fired power plant in the West, just north of us here in Congressional District 1. And we also have Grand Canyon National Park. It's just a terrific, super interesting venue, and we wanted to reach out. And the plans was spawned by our chapter last October. We've got great leadership with a student co-chair, Sierra Cottle, and we also have a terrific co-chair in Sean Newell. And we were sitting around a table and we said, what can we do? And we pointed to spring break of this year. We said, let's get on the road. We're in the middle of Route 66. We've got towns to the west, towns to the east. Let's see what we can do. So we planned a donut tour. We called it the CCL Tour for a Livable Planet and Eatable Donuts. And we were set for last spring break. Unfortunately, we were met by a significant snowstorm on Sunday. And we also ran into some significant winds on both Saturday and Sunday of our tour. It was a two-day trip. We went through 512 miles, almost six towns, three counties, and we went through and stopped in two Native nations. Our congressional district, as Brett mentioned earlier, is huge. We've got 12 Native nations here. We go all the way down to Tucson. We go all the way up to the Utah border. And we've got a lot of folks in between that don't know about CCL. So we wanted to reach out, and we filled our cars with gas, took off last March, and started in Kingman. And we had, Kingman is a city on the west flank of Arizona on Route 66. And we got over there, raised a weather flag to draw people to a park, and the wind wasn't up yet, so we really had a pretty interesting time. We found ourselves in a dog park, and that was a great place to be. We found that dogs draw people together, and when we brought out the donuts, we had perhaps our best moment talking to people. We had one person, for example, that drove up, and she was interested in climate change. She saw our banner, a big CCL banner, and wanted to talk, but she didn't want to get out of our car, out of her car. And our leader was sensitive enough to realize the circumstance, came over, talked to her for 15 minutes, offered her a donut, and really had an interesting dialogue with a local who just wanted to understand climate change better without being threatened by people. And after she got her information, she took off. But we also met with a number of other people in the city, and they invited us to one of their meetings, and Sean came back and took off and met with those folks, and we obtained, I think it was 12 letters to Congress people. So that turned out to be a really good stop. After we were in Kingman, we took off and went to another Native nation in Peach Springs. We then came down to Williams, and we met with some people, but it was frankly somewhat difficult because the wind was going up to 40 miles an hour. And one of our takeaways was that when the wind goes over 30 miles an hour, people typically don't come to parks. And we had gone to and checked out the parks beforehand on a really nice day and noticed that there was a change between windy conditions and non-windy conditions. The next morning on Sunday, after we came back on Saturday, we were met by a snowstorm, but we headed west and we went to a Navajo Nation community known as Loop. And we found that the people in Loop were actually very informed about climate change. They were seeing their native vegetation affected by drought. The vegetation was leaving, land was becoming drier. There were sand dunes forming. The anchor to the soil was leaving, and people wanted to talk. and they were particularly interested in donuts, jelly donuts there. And we had a good exchange between people with whom we might normally not make connections. And we were greeted by folks that wanted to know more about CCL, invited us to return, and that was really a good connection. That afternoon, we went to Holbrook and Winslow. Winslow as in standing in the corner in Winslow, Arizona, and we stood there. Found that the winds were not helpful to the circumstances, but we were encouraged to be able to talk to some people who really challenged us. There's a coal-fired plant next door to these two cities, and those folks wanted to talk, and we had one person come, talk, make a big presentation to us, then left, and then came back because he thought there was so much more to say. So we had an opportunity to listen, and so it was good. We found that by moving and listening, we were able to make connections with people that otherwise probably wouldn't be within our reach. And we hope to see a liaison develop in Congressional District 4 in Kingman. We hope to see growth there. And we certainly made a number of connections at a meeting that we were able to enjoy after our road trip came to a close. So those are some of the takeaways we had. We didn't have immediate results, but we've got seeds that were planted. We see some growth and we're encouraged. And more than anything, perhaps, we had a lot of fun and we realized that getting a number of chapter developers or chapter leaders into a car is a great way to do planning. So we took away some planning and we had a real good time. And we ate a lot of donuts. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. But we are expecting to go back. And we were encouraged a couple weeks ago to see that our state leadership, with which we participate, they're interested in coming back up, maybe revisiting Kingman, and taking their own road trip. And if they want to do that, we'll be happy to join them. We are CCL Flagstaff, but there aren't any other Northern Arizona chapters. So candidly, we really want to see other chapters develop. And we thought by planting some seed, we may see some growth. And we're encouraged in that respect. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Don. And part of the joy of why we wanted to have the wonderful Flagstaff story tonight is that CCL has done such a wonderful job of providing depth of resources with extensive multi-week tours. But the Flagstaff story shows you can do it with a little bit of preparation. You can still have a wonderful time. You don't have to spend months ahead of time getting out there. The real goals that you had were just to get to know the community on top of engaging them for CCL, and they were absolutely successful. We do have two last levers that we want to get to in our last 18 minutes. So what I'm going to do next is actually introduce the wonderful Dan Hersher.
Oh, I'm Dan Hersher. I'm the chapter co-leader for the Birchwood, Wisconsin CCL chapter. Birchwood is a very small town in northwest Wisconsin, sort of near Hayward. And Birchwood has roughly 500 people. A big town near us is Rice Lake at about 8,000 people. So we are a very rural area. We run a fishing resort here in Birchwood. It's a very touristy area. Lots of people come to fish and hunt and snowmobile and cross-country ski. And I know I mentioned Hayward earlier. That's where the Birkebeiner cross-country ski race is. It's a big tourist area. And our family owns a resort that's been in the family for 93 years. Started by my great-grandfather back in 1925. And so when I first got concerned with climate change, we did things on the resort that what made sense economically anyway. We changed out all the light bulbs and we got more energy efficient appliances and we installed a solar array. And they're great things to do, but they definitely weren't a match to the scale of the problem. And when I found out about CCL and carbon fee and dividend and the nonpartisan approach, I was sold. I know Brett wanted me to talk a little bit more about some of our grass tops outreach efforts, because that's been one of the things that we've done pretty well at in our part of the state. Again, tourism being a big part of it. We've done a lot of outreach to small businesses, primarily tourist businesses, things that are fly fishing companies, cross-country ski rental shops, resorts, places that lodge tourists, etc. One of the things that it kind of goes back to my original point, you just got to be out there. You got to be out there talking to people, and you're going to find out there's a lot more interest and a lot more concern, and people are looking for you to bring that up, and they're you'll find a lot more support than you might think. So some of our biggest successes with that is in 2016, it was actually a district-wide effort. We have had three chapters in the district at the time, and all of us chapters worked together to get as many small businesses to sign on to a custom leader letter to our representative asking for action on climate change. We drafted a letter that was very specific for the impacts for our district. Didn't outline any particular solutions, but it would outline things that were important to our community and our district, such as shorter winters, which cross-country skiing, snowmobiling is a big deal. More intense rainfalls that wash out the roads. We've had 2,000 year flooding events in the past 2 years. So making it as local and specific as possible was, I think, a big part of that. And then looked at all the different chambers of commerce, websites, and business organizations, and we compiled lists of businesses, and we sent out mass emails asking them to sign on to this letter. Those first emails didn't get us a whole lot of success, but then we divvied up the lists and had people calling individual businesses or stopping in person. And altogether, for the first round of that letter, we got 150 signatures. And then we did it again in the spring of 2017 and got another 80 or so. So we've got over 220 some businesses and community leaders who have signed this onto this letter saying we need congressional action on climate change. Another thing that's been successful for us is giving presentations to Rotary clubs. We've got a lot of business endorsements and people who are interested in this issue who go to Rotary Club meetings. They tend to be business owners, and they also tend to be civically minded people who are concerned about global issues. So climate change falls definitely within that. One of the really important things is keeping it nonpartisan, though. So whenever we give presentations, we talk about how we're nonpartisan and we want a bipartisan solution. And that is another really important part of our message, especially working with grass tops leaders, because some of these grass tops leaders are active in their local Republican Party or are just conservative in general. And so it helps them to hear that they can still be a conservative and they can still be a Republican and they can care about climate change at the same time. We got a resolution passed through the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, and that might in Wisconsin, we have this very unique process where citizens can submit a resolution to get consideration. So we wrote a resolution that was submitted to the Conservation Congress leadership in Madison. It was approved, and then it went to ballots in all 72 counties in Wisconsin. So every spring there's a meeting where one location every county holds a meeting where people can come and vote and express their opinions on a whole range of issues, conservation, hunting, fishing, etc. And the results of those meetings are used to advise the DNR and advise rulemaking processes for the following year. So we submitted a climate change resolution that essentially said we think that the state legislature, the state and national legislature should be taking up climate change and working on market-based solutions to climate change and to advance renewable energy. And it passed with 66% of the vote. People who go to the Conservation Congress tend to be extremely conservative. So this was also another exciting thing to show that there is a large amount of people in your district, even if they're not speaking up about it, even if they're not particularly vocal about it, they are concerned and they're interested. And if you give them that opportunity, they will often take it. So having the Conservation Congress results is just another tool in our toolkit or arrow in our quiver when we go meet with representatives so we can show our congressmen here the Conservation Congress overwhelmingly supports taking action on climate change. Another more recent thing that happened that is also very cool, there's a Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum that is pushing free market solutions to state at the state level. So at our resort, we have the solar array, we have an electric car charger, and so they made a stop there to tour our solar installation and see how local businesses are integrating renewable energy. And we had a state assembly person, that's our House of Representatives at the state level, who came, our Republican, and then we also had a Republican state Senate candidate, and they were very engaged and they asked really good questions. And it led to a follow-up meeting with that state assembly person where we sat down for coffee and he had great questions. He got carbon fee and dividend. He understood how it worked and why it would be a good idea. He had great questions on the policy aspect of it. Essentially, by the end of the meeting, was saying, I wonder how bad this climate thing's going to have to be before it's a big issue for constituents. But he got it, and it was just another one of those examples. You put yourself out there, you talk about this stuff, and I'd be amazed at what you find. First of all, it's okay to start small. One of the things that was hard for me initially, too, was to understand that a lot of the people who maybe come to one meeting or sign up for your email list are maybe not all in and ready to do everything they can possibly do on climate change. So we had these almost 30 people who came to the first meeting, and of those, only about 3 or 4 stayed consistently active. So it's okay to start small. But one of the beauties of organizing at a rural level is that everybody knows everybody else. And so you talk to one person, they're like, oh yes, I know this person who works for the Audubon Society, the Audubon Sanctuary, and you should talk to them and they'll get you a presentation. And then, so you give a presentation there and you meet 5 more people who each of them knows and 2 or 3 other people who you think who they think you should be talking to. So when in small communities, the people who have those sorts of connections are well known. Listen to what other people have to say, ask them who else you think you should be talking to.
That was a lot of wisdom all in the same application there for Dan, a lot of similar messages to what we've already heard about breaking free from that climate spiral of silence and also leveraging your network when you do speak out to realize, especially in rural areas, we can play to our strengths and build on those community connections that are already very strengthened due to everyone knowing everyone. But for tonight, what I'm going to do is we'll skip questions on that one and we'll go to them in just a little bit. What I would love to do is just quickly tell one last story. And I see the Welshes are on here as well in Nebraska, so they can correct me with anything additional that they'd like to add. But in the heart of Nebraska, on the far western edge, almost tucked into the Black Hills, as you can see, is the wonderful small area of Chadron, probably one of the most rural areas that we have within CCL's chapter network throughout the country. And both Steve and Cheryl are doing wonderful organizing work. I won't get into all of the details tonight, but I will provide just 3 quick tips that they have and have shared with me on organizing for their chapters, and I think they apply specifically to other rural areas. One of which just is, you're not bound into having your monthly meeting on a Saturday. They're creative, they have it on a Tuesday, they invite people to bring their own food and make it fun with a potluck, a very social element where people are engaged and they can sit around and catch up and have a chance to have that social atmosphere while they build in the educational piece. I think that's absolutely key. And another thing that Dan shared with me, in addition to what both Steve and Cheryl said, are not to be afraid of asking for help. Because people are busy, especially in rural areas, they have many other commitments, and if they don't feel like they're needed, they're going to move on to another organization that can use their skills. So it's counterintuitive often for feeling folk that don't feel like they want to impose on other people's time commitments, but having a chance to ask for help and roles that are ready to share are really critical for that engagement piece and building out your chapter's growth so that you can ask for other people for those other areas. They shared that there's somebody locally that just loves to enter information. So they're the one that does all the field reporting, all the promotional stuff, all the postings on Facebook, you name it. It's a wonderful role for them, and there's a lot of roles out there if you'd like to find out more with their other lessons. And the last thing I'll just share that I really loved that Cheryl shared with us is just how creative they are with their outreach and local events. We're talking parades. You can see the photos here. They just got done with a wonderful parade where they had bike floats and cars decked out with CCL gear in their local downtown parade. We're talking they have monthly film parties where they used to have the Years of Living Dangerously series as a watch party, and then additionally all sorts of other films, many of which we've highlighted, and others that they found that really build that conversation locally. Their neighbors to the north go to a lot of trade shows in Rapid City. They've gone to the auto show, the home builder show, you name it. And there's a lot of ways to leverage outside of just your traditional green groups or environmental and farmers market tables that they've had success with. So let me just close with this quote from Cheryl. I think it applies really across the board to our rural areas, and then we'll open it up to questions. And I do want to just thank everyone for being on the line again tonight. But here's what Cheryl said about a rural context that I think really resonates. She says, in our rural context, one thing that attracted me initially to CCL was its valuing civility. This fits so closely with the ways of life here in the Midwest. You tend to know everyone, and we're nurtured to be respectful of our neighbor and to be helpful. You don't want to offend them as you might go to church with one another or share farming during harvest. And CCL's emphasis on respect and appreciation is key to helping us build success and political will. So with that, I really want to thank everyone for being on the line tonight. Contact information, I'll cut and paste everyone's information in a bit. But let's open it up for questions again. We're at the top of the hour almost. But I'll thank everyone for being on the line. You're welcome to stay on and ask questions. And we also know that you have busy lives and you might have to drop off. So thank you again to Jan, to Vernon, to Don, to Dan, to Stephen, Cheryl, and Mary. And we hope that with this information, you are inspired to try something new and creative in your own neck of our universe for CCL families. Thank you, everyone, and have a great night.
Good night. That was one of the best CCL webinars ever. It was great. Thank you all so much. Truly.